This is Randy, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains, where real scientists answer your beauty questions, for Tuesday, November 12th, 2013. Welcome, everybody. I'm Randy Schuler of The Beauty Brains, and I'm here with my co-host, Perry Romanowski.
Hello, Randy, and everybody listening.
Hello, Perry. Hey, Perry, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a little bit personal.
All right.
Do you ever shop at Target?
I've been known to make a trip to Target. Actually, I'm here in Chicago, and we have right near my house one of the busiest Targets in the world. It must be. Because wow. I never like to go there. There's so many
wait, it
people.
Must be just because you wait. You just think it looks busy?
Somebody told me that. And I tell you what, sometimes I want to go to the Micro Center over there, which is next to the Target, and I'm just not going to go because Target is so crowded.
Wow, that is a fascinating piece of trivia about your private life. Thanks for sharing that.
But you know what I like about Target is you can find lots of beauty products and cosmetics, and if as a cosmetic chemist and a person interested in that, you can find a number of brands. You know, it occurs to me that this is starting to sound like a commercial for Target. I'm wondering.
Well, I'll tell you. Let me put a little bit of a trivia spin on that because I just found out how many personal care product suppliers sell products into Target. Now, maybe you know this number already, but take a guess. How many different beauty care companies do you think sell products into Target?
All right. Are we just counting corporations as one, like Pantene or like P&G might sell Pantene and Herbal Essence?
The quote was as a company, so just throw me a number.
All right, I'm going to say 44.
That's your favorite number, isn't it?
You know how I try to work the number 44 in every aspect of my life.
It's a little bit of a crutch, but anyway, no, I'm sorry, but you're horribly, horribly wrong. The correct answer is 7,500.
Wow, that's a lot. I wouldn't have put it over 1,000 for sure.
It's a lot. Now we're not counting just, you know, shampoo and skincare products, right? That's, you know, toothpaste and antiperspirant and everything, right? But 7,500 suppliers sell beauty products into Target. That's kind of amazing.
That's a lot of suppliers.
And I learned that little tidbit in an article that I'd like to talk about today.
Ah, of course. The article on Target's new transparency rankings.
Yeah, and let's talk about what that means. So this is an article from the website cosmeticsdesign.com, which is in my news feed. It's one of my favorite sources for new cosmetic information.
That's the kind of thing that nerdy cosmetic scientists read, right?
Indeed it is.
You know, most of our audience is probably reading Allure and Vogue. You're reading cosmeticsdesign.com.
Is that some sort of slam against our audience?
No, it's a slam against you, if anything.
In this episode, co-hosts fight.
Actually, it's not even a slam. I was just pointing out the differences between somebody who looks at the beauty industry from the science of it and somebody who looks at the beauty industry from, you know, what to wear.
Well, that's a good point, and I was just trying to be provocative to raise our ratings, so I apologize for that.
Actually, so I saw we were up over like 500 listens for the last episode.
Oh, not bad at all.
Yeah, pleased.
So the article is titled, Industry Might See Implications from Target's Transparency Ratings. And we'll put the link in the show notes, of course. You know, I always feel important when I say, you know, I'll put something in the show notes. It's a very empowering thing for me to say.
It is. And all those HTML skills that you developed over the years have really come in handy.
So this article on cosmetics design talks about Target's new intention to provide what they call, quote, industry-wide clarity around what really makes a product sustainable. So, you know, sustainability is one measurement of how green a product is or how green the company is that provides the product. And they provide an interesting statistic in the article. They said, according to Data Monitor, that as many as 30% of Americans are concerned about the credibility of natural and organic claims on cosmetics. Now, I would think that should be closer to 100% because there's so much bull out there. Wait, Can I say bullshit? Are we allowed to swear on the program?
I don't know. We might have to put explicit on the tag.
Oh, but... well, feel free to bleep that out if we want to during editing.
All right.
So so what Target is doing to help people be less confused about sustainability and green products is that they are instituting a program where they'll collect information from all these 7,500 suppliers of personal care products, and then Target will tell their customers how green or how sustainable the product is by rating it on a 100-point scale. So that's Target's plan. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, we should first step back for a second and talk about what sustainable is and green and natural and how it all comes together. In the cosmetic industry, probably back, what was that, circa 1996, when we put together that VO5 Naturals?
Yes, it was back then.
That was kind of when this movement sort of got going. But what you look at is that there's what we call in the industry the green movement, and it's a push to make cosmetics and personal care products seem more natural or green. And there's kind of a difference in my mind to this. The green and natural, it reflects, you know, the origin of the products. But the term sustainable to me is more reflective of the environmental impact of your products. So I think you could be green and natural and still be terrible on sustainability. For example, suppose you were using cosmetics that had a derivative from a rare species of plant in the rainforest, and if you used a lot of it, you would deplete the rainforest resources. So in that way, it's a nice green and natural product, but it's also not sustainable and it's bad for the environment.
Agreed. I think that example is maybe a little bit extreme. I think for the most part, I'll try and speak in generalities here, but if, let's say you're using petroleum-derived ingredients, which we will eventually use up and won't be able to get anymore, versus using a plant-derived ingredient that we can make more of, I would argue that the plant-derived ingredient is more sustainable than the petroleum-derived ingredient.
Well, I would just suggest to you that plants are also endangered, right? And so there are certain habitats, especially with the problems of global warming and things, are certain habitats that are going away. And, you know, in the future, there might be plants that we're not able to grow anymore.
You don't believe in this whole global warming thing, do you?
I'm just kidding.
It's
a whole different show.
but you raise a good point, which is there is a spectrum that we're speaking of here that does include green, natural, organic is somewhere in the mix. So there's a lot of factors that figure into however a product would be rated to be considered to be sustainable.
But that does bring us back to sustainability and what Target is trying to do. I think what Target is trying to do is they're focusing on the environmental impact of the products, what they're doing here. And essentially, they're trying to force their suppliers to behave a certain way that and be open to consumers and tell consumers what is in the products and how the products are made.
Well, and that's at the core of this concept of transparency. It's informing consumers what and how companies are making their products. And that doesn't apply just to cosmetics. It certainly applies to foods and to other industries as well. I think as long as, I mean, it's you know, you could argue both sides of the coin on this, right? I think at the heart of this, it's probably a good idea. I'm just concerned until I see this 100-point rating scale that Target uses, and I don't believe that's been disclosed yet, I don't know if this is a good thing for the cosmetic industry or not. If they are purely ranking an ingredient from good to bad, or a product, I guess, from good to bad, based on environmental impact, that's one thing. But if they're starting to say, you know, you shouldn't use mineral oil on your skin because that's bad, that's a problem, because we know mineral oil and some other petrochemically derived raw materials are actually the most effective skin moisturizers. So it's a slippery slope when we start to see rating systems like this come into place.
Yeah. And we should say that Target isn't the only ones here. Probably one of the originators is a little local grocery store. Well, I say local, it's national, but a place called Whole Foods. And Whole Foods actually has a standards list, and they list all the chemicals. If you want your, if you want to be in the Whole Foods, you know, certified natural organic aisle, there are only certain chemicals that they allow you to formulate with. So if it's not on their approved list of chemicals, then you cannot get your product into Whole Foods.
And again, you have to be careful of what their approved list consists of, because I've noticed their shampoos, for example, will use some of the lauryl and laureth sulfates, which some people rail against because they think they're dangerous and certainly don't think they're natural. So you go into Whole Foods assuming, oh, it's on their shelf, it must be good for me. There may be ingredients in there you still don't care for. So be an informed consumer, read the ingredient list as always.
I should mention that even more significant than Target and Whole Foods is something that Walmart has recently announced. A couple weeks ago, Walmart announced that they were going to create a list of, 10 or 15 ingredients that they're not going to allow in personal care products. And so what we're seeing here is retailers are starting to fill in the role of regulatory parts. Like, you would expect that the governments might do this, but right. it's really the retailers and the market that's doing it. So I guess it's free market capitalism in action, right?
Well, we're certainly all for that. And I think if the pendulum does swing the other way, let's say that these retailers are listening to a vocal minority of consumers who are insisting on whatever it be, all natural, let's say. And let's say that that leads retailers to ban certain ingredients that are more effective. You'll see consumers then become dissatisfied with how the products work, and you'll see other retailers capitalize that and start to sell those products because they know they work better. So there'll be a little give and take, I think, until the marketplace sort of settles out in what, you know, what standards really work for consumers.
Which is why I don't think you really need any additional regulations in the cosmetic industry. You can let, I mean, you have the regulation that the products have to be safe, which they are, so you demonstrate safety. And then if you want to, I don't know, make a different level or a different standard of safety, as maybe some of these companies are implying, even there's no good evidence for it, then that's fine. That's the products that they want to sell. I should mention that one of my biggest beefs with all of these kinds of programs is they're not evaluated by scientists, or at least they don't seem to be. For example, in the Whole Foods list of chemicals that they say are natural and you can use in formulating, clearly that list wasn't put together by someone who knows about formulating, because if it was, they would have made different choices about compounds, which in my mind, some of them are sustainable and then some of them are not sustainable, and they're keeping out some perfectly good ingredients which are sustainable. So it seems almost arbitrary the kinds of decisions they make about what standards to adhere to.
The best list of standards I've seen is the one that's published by a group in the Netherlands called the Global Research Initiative, and they're rating things like the water sources used in the production of the raw materials, including how much water is recycled. They talk about biodiversity, how well the sourcing of the raw materials protect the ecosystem, which would go back to that example you gave earlier in the show. They measure greenhouse gas emissions, both CO2 and ozone depleting substances. Then they look at chemical waste. So I think being transparent and a company disclosing that information can be helpful. Let's just not blindly ban things without science to back it up.
Well, all that is fascinating, especially for formulators, but really, what does all this mean for consumers, Randy?
That's a good question, Perry.
In my mind, what it really means is that the products that we're using now are probably not going to work the same way as the products that you're used to using. And typically, when you restrict the amount of ingredients that someone can use, it just gets harder to make products that work the same. Remember that whole debacle with the 55% VOCs? And hairspray?
Right. It basically forced formulators to put water into hairspray, which made, if they wanted to sell it at a reasonable price, they had to put water in hairspray, which is the worst thing you can do for a hairspray. It makes your hair droop.
And it's, right now, the hairsprays that people use right now, they're not as good as the hairsprays they used to use in the 1990s.
Except for a few brands which took the more expensive approach and used special materials that don't contain water. So there are a few brands that found a way around that, but most brands went the cheap route.
Exactly. And so when it comes down to the bottom line of all of these sustainability things, they're probably not making the products safer. The products are already safe. They may be improving the environmental impact, and that could be the best reason to do any of these things. But the most likely thing that a consumer will notice is that your products just aren't working as well as they used to.
Well, hopefully they'll take solace in the fact that they're saving the environment.
And you have to be, consumers should be aware of what we call greenwashing in the industry.
But we're out of time this week. So in our next show, we'll talk about the five reasons why companies still greenwash. Now, if our audience is impatient and they don't want to wait an entire week to hear about greenwashing, what should they do?
Well, of course, if you want to learn all about greenwashing first, go to the website and get our new book, It's Okay to Have Lead in Lipstick.
And answers to other beauty questions you're dying to know. So we'll put a link to where you can buy the book in the show notes, but it's available on Amazon.com. It's on iTunes. Every place you can buy modern publications, you can buy this book.
And we even have, like, paper copies of an actual book, which makes an excellent gift at Christmas. You know, the problem with electronic books is, like, if you're going to give it away as a gift, like, what do you do? Wrap up somebody's iPhone?
Well, you could give an iPhone with the audiobook loaded on it. That's one approach. That's what I'd like to do, because the paper books are so unsustainable.
Right, but then you have, like, 16 iPhones, you know.
What's wrong with that?
That's right, Mr. Apple.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this week.
It was good talking to you, and we will chat next week.
So stay tuned for part two on the five reasons companies still greenwash. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.